Chase and Big Joe, SEC Media Days. Our coverage presented by Brewhouse South in Cool Springs, rolling right along on day number three. And excited to talk to Benjamin Watson of the SEC Network and ESPN. What's going on? How you doing? You enjoying this?
Man, I'm doing well. I mean, it's a marathon, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is.
Yeah, I know you guys have probably conducted thousands of interviews. We've been, wall-to-wall coverage, hours and hours on SEC Network. But it's always good to see everybody come together, and especially here in Atlanta. So my family and I are local, so it's always good to not have to travel.
Did you enjoy seeing your Bulldogs come through yesterday?
I did. It's always special. I mean, it brings out the fan in me for sure. Seeing the Bulldogs, we had Kirby Smart on set, able to talk to him a little bit about, obviously, you know, Gunnar Stockton, everybody's talking about him. But, you know, this football team has a lot of, guys returning, and it's an exciting time in the SEC for sure. There are several teams, I think, who have an opportunity to make it back here in several months in December.
Do you get the old, he's a Georgia guy, he loves Georgia, the old Georgia bias from the rest of the crew?
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
And I'm okay with that. I was talking to Roman about this earlier. I said, you know, this is a league where, a conference where that's okay. Like, I think that our fans understand that these allegiances run deep.
Right.
And, as long as we're, you know, we give our analysis, I think everybody likes to hear a little bit of like, yeah, go Dogs. Like, you know, I'm a Bulldog fan for sure. I can analyze and tell you what they did right and what they did wrong. But at the same time, I think everybody loves that kind of banter.
I love it. Ben Watson's with us from the Chase and Big Joe show. I was telling Chase earlier, everybody's talking about Texas and Georgia and Garrett Nussmeier and Diego Pavia. Nobody's talking about Alabama, Ben. Nobody is. Why is that?
I think because Saban's not there. If you remember SEC Media Days, Saban would roll up here in Rolls Royce. Probably maybe not a Rolls Royce, but he rolling here and everybody's like, it's Alabama Day.
When I had first, the state troopers with him.
When I first started with SEC Network 4 or 5 years ago, they told me, all right, at SEC Media Days, when it's Alabama Day, you understand. And so I think part of that aura is gone, you know, with Saban. He earned that. But I think also the fact that Alabama, you know, they weren't in the championship. No SEC team has been there. You know, they weren't in the SEC championship. There's questions at quarterback. But to your point, when you look at this football team,
loaded.
They are loaded. I just walked past Deontay Lawson and shook his hand, talked to him. And he looked down on me like I was a little kid. I'm 6'3". I'm
That's
not
a
little.
Dude.
Yeah, and they've got a lot of those dudes. They got a veteran secondary. Offensive line is back. Run game. You know, I think that offensively with the quarterback, they're gonna start to look more and more like what Kalen DeBoer wants his offense to look like. And that can be scary when you couple that with that defense.
Is LSU a team that, you know, I think some people will put them in kind of the upper tier with the Georgias and Texas and then Alabama by default. Are they being overlooked, or do you think they belong in that upper tier with Brian Kelly and his pedigree and Nussmeier?
I think the talk around them has been fairly accurate.
Yeah.
I think Georgia's being under-talked. I think Alabama might be being under-talked a little bit. But I think LSU, I think when you look at LSU, they have a very, very high ceiling, but they also got a floor.
Yeah.
And when you look at quarterback position, which is the most important, they bring back a veteran, which I think for them and for me being an analyst, like that's the number one thing I look at. Your quarterback situation is solid. It's solid. But that defense, can Blake Baker get that defense this year to be much better than it was last year? And the good thing with LSU for them is they're going to get a test early in Clemson. They're going to get to go on the road. They're going to get to go to Death Valley in South Carolina in Clemson. They're going to go against an offense with Cade Klubnik that can throw the football,
right,
that can challenge their secondary. And so I think they're going to learn very early what they have. But defensively last year, especially in the pass defense, they struggled a bit.
Let me ask you about Diego Pavia. When Vanderbilt comes through media days, it's like, oh, thanks for coming, Vandy. Take care of yourself. Now, Ben, we're 2.5 days in. We're still talking about Diego.
Yeah.
To him, to you, what do you love about this guy?
Man, I love the fact that he's a movement. He's a movement, and he brings his family with him, his brothers. Like, you know, it's just exciting to watch because I love it when you've got a guy who lifts everybody else up, and not just guys on his team. You know, I'm talking about the city.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, you know, the university. I'm talking about people that don't really watch college football and definitely don't watch Vanderbilt football, but they say, you know, I want to see what this kid is doing. And so it's just been fun to watch him grow, you know, and I love his bravado, but I really love the fact that he has put Vanderbilt in a place where Vanderbilt hasn't been, at least to my memory, in the last 20, 30 years.
Yeah, I do. Real quick, I know you got to go. Yep. I follow you on social media. Thank you for your faith and your love, sir, of your family and everything. I think it's admirable, and I love it, man. So thank you.
Appreciate that, man.
Sir.
Appreciate that. That's the number one thing, for sure. You know, where we stand at the very end of the day, Jesus is going to ask, God's going to ask, what did you do with my son?
Yeah.
And the most important thing is our relationship with our Lord and Savior. That's it.
Amen.
So, you know, while we love football is a huge part of all of our life. Sports is very important. I think that sports is an avenue really to tell people about the most important things. And that's the fact that a loving God sent his son to live a perfect life and shed his blood on the cross so that you and I can have a relationship with him. Like, that is the good news. And that's the gospel. And that's how we, as believers, live out our life, you know, in our occupation, with our families, personally. Excited to share that whenever I can. Thank you.
Amen.
Yes, sir.
Amen to that. Real quick, you played with Mike Vrabel. We knew him very well as the coach of the Titans.
Oh, yeah, of course you knew Vrabes.
How do you think that's going to work out in New England? Is there enough of Bill in him to kind of still have that, but also he's his own coach at the same time?
And it might be too much Bill in him. like he is a Bill disciple. I remember going against Vrabel in one-on-ones and stuff. He was playing linebacker. I was tight end. And he'll find any way. Bend your fingers. He'll do anything he can do. But he has the discipline, the gravitas, you know, the experience to be successful there. Now it's a matter of the roster and stacking some good players. But his system is going to be successful. It's going to translate to what's expected in New England.
100%. Ben, thanks so much for doing this. We appreciate your time.
No problem, bro.
Have a good one. More coming. SEC Media Days, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game on this Thursday, wrapping up SEC Media Days presented by Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. Appreciate Benjamin Watson joining us from the SEC Network. Also a former New England Patriot, played with a few teams, Saints.
First year in the league, he wins. I was going to ask, but he had to get out and do other things. Like, first year in the league, you win a Super Bowl. I was like, did you think it'd be that easy when you do that? And it's like, I don't know, but good talking to Bramble. He's great on the SEC Network. Played the game at a high level. He's fun to listen to and fun to watch.
Yeah, 100%. So appreciate him, and we've had a few people from the SEC Network this week, and always enjoy working with them and getting them on. So. Been really, really cool. Shifting gears, we haven't really talked a lot of Titans this week because obviously we have been deep in college football. They report for training camp on Tuesday. The first practice will be on Wednesday. And I was kind of scrolling through Twitter this morning, and I saw a familiar face that went on Good Morning Football on the NFL Network, and that would be one Jeffrey Simmons.
Oh, boy.
The Titans defensive tackle. And, of course, he talked about a lot of different things, but was asked about, and look, you gotta love this because he gave a pretty long answer when he was just simply asked about getting to know Cam Ward. This was Jeffrey Simmons.
You know, first off, you know, I think that our team, Tennessee Titans, never get the respect and attention we need. I never seen the number one pick overall never get the respect and, you know, quite frankly, the attention that he deserved. I went to minicamp, and, you know, first off, I met Cam for the first time. It was at a private birthday party that Saturday before the minicamp, the week before minicamp. And we met, and of course, we were talking a little smack then. I was like, I heard you've been slicing the guys up. You've been talking smack. I said, I'm going to bring that to you too, man. Like, I talk smack. We started there, and then just to be able to get that relationship with him off the field, you know, we chopped it up for a long time. We talked about fishing and things that he liked to do off the field. You know, I think that's what mattered the most for me, is especially young guys trying to gain that relationship with guys off the field to make them feel comfortable. We know that Cam Ward is going to have to play football for us this season, and it's my goal and my job to, you know, help him out. Going to year 7, I think I've been the longest tenure Titans you know, with Tennessee, just to try to make him feel at home from a vet. You know, it's crazy to say that now that, you know, year seven, a vet. But, you know, it's been unbelievable with his, you know, I'm sure you guys saw it, but, I mean, Cam Ward went to, it was in minicamp, and, you know, it was out there play. We stopped him. I think I ended up getting a sack, and all of a sudden, we talking smack, and Callie gave him the dang play, and I'm like, you know, I'm still talking smack to him. I'm drawing because that's my game. Like, I want to talk smack to him. I want to get in your head. It didn't faze him. You know, he's still talking smack while Callie getting the play to him. Still talking smack. Callie getting the play. He giving the play to the offense. Still talking smack to me. And I'm like, I'm giving the play. And literally, when he gave him that play that came through the line, the next play, after the smack talk, he threw an 80-yard bomb to Calvin Ridley. So that just the swagger. That right there showed me, like, we got us one. He's legit. And, you know, and I think where we at right now with, like I said, him not getting enough praise. And like I said, who is not known that number one pick overall don't get the attention and the praise that he deserved. But I think that's a chip on his shoulder. You could tell the way he go about his bidding, his swagger, his dominion. This is going to be one of the ones that, you know, I'm excited to see. I'm excited to get back to camp with him next week, to be more around him and to learn a little more about him. But, man, it's been unbelievable to get to know him. We're supposed to be going fishing. We've been talking a little smack, too, off the field with fishing. I don't think nobody in that locker room can outfish me, but he think he can. So we're going to make sure we get that test one of the off days during training.
That was Jeffrey Simmons on Good Morning Football today, talking about his teammate Cam Ward. Here's why I wanted to play that. He started off talking about, we don't get any respect. The number one overall pick wasn't getting respect. And I'm not dogging Jeffrey Simmons for that. But, I mean, it's pretty clear that stuff bothers him. Cam Ward, right. He may have a chip. I think he does have a chip on his shoulder. But I don't think it gets to him because this has been his whole career. He wasn't recruited. He goes to Incarnate Word. Then he transfers to Washington State. And then transfers to Miami, and he's the number one overall pick. But this is something he's battled his whole life. So it's interesting to me to see how the veteran defensive tackle, again, not picking on Jeffrey Simmons, but it clearly this stuff bothers him. This has been discussed. And the rookie quarterback that's kind of like, all right, just watch. Watch what I'm going to do.
Well, the thing with Simmons, all right, so you get paid. Now you want to win. I mean, that's
sure.
Now you want to win a Super Bowl. He knows they're not getting anywhere with Will Levis. And so, yeah, it's different when you bring a rookie guy in now. You're not going to rate, you know, haze him and all the things that went on, bully him, all that stuff. You got to win now. I mean, the thing came out in CBS Sports yesterday ranking Brian Callahan as the worst coach of the National Football League, and everything is riding on Cam Ward. When they report Tuesday and first practice Wednesday, they all have to be on the same page. I mean, there is no rookie veteran. They've got to work together to win ball games because Callahan's future is on the line,
yeah.
And it's Cam Ward. So Jeffrey Simmons knows that. I still think at some point Jeffrey Simmons is traded. I still do. I still believe that. And it's funny. He said he got
like this year, like at mid-year.
Yeah, I think he's somehow. I think I do.
So you think late deadline?
Yeah, I think he's gone at some point.
Interesting.
Also, he got a sack during 7-on-7.
Yeah,
or whatever that was, that nonsense he made up. Look, I like Jeffrey Simmons. I think he's a hell of a player. I've defended him because you guys are all screaming for double-digit sacks when that's not his job to do that. Yeah. So I think him and Sweat are a force inside. They play together. And look, he's smart. It all rides on Cam Ward. It all rides on how well you can go. That Broncos game is massively important for this franchise in so many ways. You don't want to go 3-14 again because what happens next year? Probably going to go 4-13.
Yeah.
And then what happens in 27? You're moving across the parking lot.
New stadium, probably new uniforms.
Yep.
Like you got to be ready for that.
So he can go on whatever show he wants to and talk about whatever
he
wants.
That's
fine.
I'm glad he does because, I being truthful, I'm kind of surprised he hasn't shut it all down because every time he speaks, he gets criticized. And he's kind of, again, in my opinion, he's kind of done that to himself a little bit.
Yeah.
But, like, good on him for going on these shows. My thing is just, I don't know. I'm trying to think of how I want to word this. But
say it, buddy.
My thing is stop coming across like you're complaining all the time. Because that's how it appears. And I know that's not what he means. I know he's a competitor. I would never 100 for any reason question his toughness because I know he's a tough guy.
Right. Tough guy.
But, you know, it's like he's asked about his quarterback and he opens with, yeah, we don't get any respect. He doesn't get any respect. And you know what? That's all very, very true. You know how you change that? You go win.
You win games. How do you trash talk fishing?
I don't know.
I'm curious. Mine's bigger, that's what she said. I mean, I don't know how you trash
talk. She did?
But no, that's fine. But again, this team has to be on the same page from day one. And we know, I mean, there's probably, what, there's 22 starting positions, 19 or 20. They know in their mind what's what and what's got to go and who's where and who's going to do what. They know already. So you come and just get to work. Those joint practices with the Buccaneers and Falcons are muy importante. You got to go and work together and learn about your football team. Not much time, man, because September 7th, I think that's what it is, or 8th, whatever the day you go and take on the Denver Broncos. So we'll see. It's exciting because football is here. The Titans are here. You're ranked. Look, you got your backs against the wall. Nobody thinks you're any good. Your coach is the worst-rated coach in the National Football League. Just like you said, how do you change it? Pretty simple. Win games.
You know, this may be a dumb question, but
remember, there are no dumb questions, just dumb people.
Yeah, well, we don't know what category I fall in.
Right.
You know, I wouldn't want this from a what we do standpoint, and being the PD of a radio station. But if they close the first 2 weeks of training camp, like nobody could see them, how beneficial do we think that could be? Because then it's like we don't see the mistakes. We don't see the rookies being rookies. They got a couple of weeks to just kind of fine-tune things.
Well, then we spend 2 weeks like, why are you hiding?
Right, of course.
Why are you hiding from
us? Well,
no,
like if the league came out and said, hey, we're going to close training camp for 2 weeks. Coaches would love it.
Oh, I'm sure they would.
Coaches would absolutely love it. But I'm not advocating for that. I'm just saying, like, what if? Because you would see – like, or maybe they say, hey, we're going to let you come to one practice at the very beginning – and then we'll see you in 2 weeks.
And then
you see how different things look.
If you're worried about the fans and opening training camp, then there's a problem.
Well, the reason I say that is because we kind of do this to ourselves of, you know, we'll find the training camp darling and fall in love with the training camp darling and be like, oh, my God, here we go.
You get the, like, so-and-so is 23 out of 27 during camp in the first three. And those are – we laugh that every year because we know that means nothing. I get why people want to see that because if he goes 5 for 27, there's a problem. Yeah. I understand all that. But, again, I mean, the joint practices are massively important than that first game versus the Broncos. Win that game, and you answer a lot of questions.
I'm going to say this, though, and this is not a prediction. This is a spoiler.
Okay.
Will Levis, like his first few practices, is going to be perfect. And Cam Ward's going to be a rookie, make mistakes, and to use a phrase that Jared likes to use, you people are going to lose your mind. That I bet you is going to happen in the first couple of weeks of training camp. Can you imagine, like, if for the first, you know, three or four open practices that Levis is just, I mean, he's throwing dimes and he is just on it, and Cam is a rookie and is struggling. How freaked out people are going to be.
Because it'd be like, that doesn't mean anything. And they're like, oh, my gosh, he's terrible at camp. It's the same talk every single year that we do, that we go through with all this. When you try to figure things out and who's going to do this, who's going to play where. But, look, Cam Ward's your starter. You took him number one. You're building everything around him. There's a great rapport with him. Now go ahead and win. Now, here's the deal. 3-14, Callahan's not coming back.
Yeah.
Then you start again. And then what's the Bongino? What's the GM's name?
Borgonzi?
Borgonzi, thank you.
Bongino?
Look, man, there's so many people running through my mind. I don't know what's going on.
Call him Buongiorno at this point.
Buongiorno.
Bongino.
Then he gets his own guy in there and his own people to do everything and go from there. That's why I really hope this team goes like 10-7 so they don't have to fire Brian Callahan. So they get like, all right, now we're stuck with him. Now, you know, we did really good. I'd love to see the team go 10-7 or 11-6 and have to keep Callahan back.
Sure.
Again, go out and win the game and see what happens. But
I just want to see a productive team.
Yeah.
But along those lines, we're wrapping up list season, but I found one today that I thought was a little interesting because there is a national publication that gives the Titans a little bit more of a chance than I thought they would to get out of the cellar in the AFC South. We'll discuss that coming up next. We're live at the College Football Hall of Fame SEC Media Days as we are wrapping things up. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game here on this Thursday, SEC Media Days. Wrapping up. This is a great song and a great collaboration.
It is. It's a collab.
A collab.
As the kids like to say in the at the shopping malls these days, it's a collab.
Radio Row is kind of becoming a ghost town. A lot of people packing up.
Well, the first 3 days were intense. I mean, yeah. Really intense. And a lot of action going on here. A lot of the access. We talked to Clark Lee. We talked to Josh Heupel. Really fun. Everybody else involved in the SEC. So it's really cool for us to be here. And all the access we got, and talked to a lot of people from around the Southeast who love college football as much as we do.
And thanks to Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. Experience Nashville's ultimate sports and brew hangout at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs, also on Highway 100 in Bellevue and on Charlotte Pike on the west side. 615-737-1025. It's our phone and text line driven by Wilson County Hyundai, .com. All right, so I was looking at NFL.com today. And they have, this is Kevin Patra has written this, 2025 NFL season, ranking all eight candidates to go from worst to first in division races. So they've taken all eight divisions and the teams that finished last and then ranked them who they thought has the best chance to go from the cellar to win their division this year. Number one really isn't that much of a surprise. That's the NFC West and the San Francisco 49ers that went 6-11 in 2024, finished last. They underwent a massive reboot, shelling out big bucks. They traded Deebo Samuel. Where'd they trade him to?
The Commanders.
That's right. So they have changed. They paid Brock Purdy. They have changed up that offense. But I don't know. You look at that division. Seattle, I don't really know what Seattle is.
It's in Washington.
Yeah, it is in Washington. So not really, not really sure there. I mean, the Rams, do they have one more in them? The Cardinals, I don't think are very good. So, I mean, I think they're kind of in a similar situation as we are in the AFC South, that it's not a great division. And San Francisco, if, you know, things go well with Ayuk and Purdy, that they can probably jump back up in there.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, it's still a good team, good coach, good program, everything that goes on there. You got to figure out Juwan Jennings. Do you pay him or do you like, oh, we're going to let him go? I mean, there's still questions there, but I mean, that's still a really good football team.
Number two, they're just going to be that way because it's who they are. Overrated team. Everybody is maybe putting a little too much of the cart before the horse here. The New England Patriots, they were 4-13 last year, and Mike Vrabel is now the head coach. They did a lot in the offseason with free agency. Drake May, looking for him to break out in year two. Could they – I mean, they would have to knock off the Buffalo Bills to win the AFC East.
Yeah, that's it. They're not knocking the Bills off. The Dolphins are a train wreck. Mike McDaniel, we jumped on that bandwagon 2 years ago, and that was awful for us. And the Jets are terrible. I mean, they got a shot, but the Bills are still running that division right now.
Number three is definitely the most intriguing one to me. And if you wanted to put a little money on it, I wouldn't say that's a terrible idea. The Bears. The Chicago Bears. Ben Johnson comes in, takes over as the head coach. Caleb Williams, you know, goes into year two. But they're building an offense around him that I think he's going to be much more comfortable with. There is a ton of optimism when it comes to the Bears. And in talking from people that we know in Chicago, you know, I think it's cautious optimism, but it's certainly there. They went 5-12 last year. Could the Bears upset the Packers, the Vikings, and the Lions to win the NFC North?
Not a chance. They'll still finish last. They're not better than the Lions. The Packers are great with Jordan Love. The Vikings have the best offensive line, might be the best defensive line in football. They're loaded great. I mean, J.J. McCarthy's the kind of the question mark there, but the Bears are nowhere near as good as the three other teams. I still see another 5-12 season for them.
Now we get to number four. This team went 3-14 last year, and they had the number one overall pick. I am talking about the Tennessee Titans. This is what he writes, quote, "When I started this exercise, I didn't expect the Titans to be anywhere near this high up. Playing in the AFC South has its benefits. Like Houston 2 years ago, Tennessee could take advantage of a division littered with question marks. Cam Ward becoming the 2025 version of C.J. Stroud or Jaden Daniels could do it. The Titans buffered the young passer with veterans. Finally shoring up the worst offensive line in football was vital. I have concerns about Dan Moore Jr. and an aging Kevin Zeitler throughout a full season, but their world's better than the crew Tennessee employed last year." That's the offensive line part.
Okay.
"The Calvin Ridley-Tyler Lockett pairing gives Ward two receivers who know how to get open and help a young QB. The Titans' defense, however, has significant question marks, particularly on edge. If L'Jarius Sneed can't stay healthy again, toss in a corner is question mark as well. Brian Callahan's club struggled alongside its first-year coach in 2024, but let's not forget, the Titans were in a slew of games where the quarterbacks bungled the end, losing 6 one-score tilts. If Ward can help flip those close L's into W's, Tennessee has a shot at turning things around in a division no club has put the clamps on."
Okay.
You've basically been saying this all offseason.
Thank you so much.
It's the worst division
yes.
in football. Houston is nothing to write home about.
Right.
Jacksonville, we have no idea.
Correct.
And in Indy, I think Indy sucks.
They do. So yeah. You have to be better than those three teams. Why can't you be better than those three teams? And you can. I think you're all in the same boat. I mean, the AFC South is awful. These football teams are awful. Who's going to be the best, awfulest football team? I know that's an oxymoron.
The best worst.
That's right. To get out of there, but that's fine. And so the Titans are still there. I'm curious to hear who the other teams are.
All right. Well, I can do that for you. Number five, they went 4-13 last year in the AFC West, the Las Vegas Raiders with Pete Carroll. And a lot of people have a lot of faith in Pete Carroll.
Yeah, they do. I just, you know, what is it with Antonio Pierce? It's like, oh, we got our guy now. They were awful. It all comes down to quarterback play. They think they got a quarterback in Geno Smith. Pete Carroll comes down. I mean, there's a lot of good things that those guys did in Seattle right there. But are you better than the Broncos? No. Are you better than the Chiefs? No. Are you better than the Chargers? No. I just thought by the Raiders moving into a new stadium, that city loves that football team. They'd kind of feel the pulse of that and get a little energy from them. They've done nothing. And even Tom Brady can't save them.
But now they got players. I mean, Brock Bowers is a stud. Max Crosby has been a stud. I think Ashton Jeanty is going to be a stud. And I would keep my eye on them because that division, Mike Williams just retired from the Chargers, by the way. I don't think that's huge news, but there's a receiver that Jim Harbaugh doesn't have now. So the Chargers, I think, are everybody's kind of looking at what they're going to do.
They got a quarterback.
Kansas City obviously is the best team in that division, and I think they're going to continue to be the best team in that division. But I wouldn't be shocked if they take a step back. It just, you know, it's a dynasty can't last forever. So
as long as you get Andy Reid, you get that quarterback, you're good. So
I think Denver is a team to really pay attention to because I think they're on the rise. So that's an intriguing division. Including the Raiders, if I'm being smart about it, I'm saying the Raiders are maybe a year or two off.
Yeah, I think they still finish last.
I think Pete Carroll is going to turn this around and pull them out of the cellar, but I think he might be setting it up for whoever is going to take over for him when he's done.
With 73-74, a youthful 73-74. So, yeah, I still think they're last. So, I mean, of all these, the Niners are the one, but keep going.
Yeah. Number six, the New Orleans Saints at 5-12. They don't have a quarterback.
I love the Saints, man. We had a text last night about the new helmet, the white helmet, which
I hate.
Yeah,
you don't like the white helmet.
The Florida Lee looks good on the gold helmets they got there. Look, they're just not good. And it's always curious, Chase, to look how teams just get bad quickly. And the Titans got bad quickly. The Saints, there's just nothing there for that football team. I mean, no quarterback. You know, you might have Spencer Rattler being your quarterback. Who knows what's going on? But, yeah, that's their bottom barrel. I hate to say that.
Number seven is the 3-14 Cleveland Browns. They have 18 quarterbacks on the roster, and none of them are any good.
Right. I mean, are they better than Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, or Baltimore? There's no chance. No. There's no, but they're going to be fun to watch because a lot of people think because as bad as they're going to be that Shedeur Sanders by week five will be the starting quarterback. And what if he is something good?
I would trade somebody.
Pickett? Gabriel? Flacco?
I mean, maybe Kenny Pickett, even though you just traded for him.
Yeah.
You know, see what you can get there. Keep Flacco in the room. Keep Deshaun Watson out of the room. by the way, he got some last night with the jokes with
Oh, absolutely.
There were definitely some there.
What a disastrous contract. Yeah,
I mean,
certainly,
okay.
Yeah.
Why not? What do you got to lose if you just put Shedeur out there?
Nothing.
Because people would pay attention to you.
Yeah, right.
Like if you put Dylan Gabriel out there, they're not going to pay as close attention. But if you put Shedeur Sanders out there day one, people are going to pay attention.
No, I agree with you. It'd be great to see him come in and succeed there. I don't know. But, look, you got to beat the other three teams in that division. It's not happening. So I'm curious to see who is last.
The New York Football Giants.
Oh, my gosh.
They went 3-14 last year. They boast a potential game-wrecking defensive front with Abdul Carter alongside Brian Burns, Kayvon Thibodeau, and Dexter Lawrence.
Couple big men there.
Receiver Malik Nabers is a stud and could even be more productive in his second season with a stable quarterback situation. There's little doubt that the Giants upgraded the signal caller room with the additions of Russell Wilson, Jameis Winston, and first-rounder Jackson Dart. Of course, compared to what they employed last year, that isn't saying much. I don't think the Giants are 3-win bad. However, Wilson hasn't proven lately he's a game-altering QB. He's been inconsistent and panicky in the pocket. He also has been hurt. The ever-present questions, along with the Giants' offensive line, won't do him any favors. Dart is a wild card. With the coaching staff squarely under pressure to produce positive results, the rookie could be forced into action earlier than planned. Even if we can buy that big blue is better in 2025, expecting them to completely leap over the Super Bowl champs, the Jaden Daniels-led Commanders, and a Cowboys club getting Dak Prescott back is a non-starter.
Awful. I mean, both New York teams are awful, and the Giants got a long way to go. Brian Daboll, he's gone. I mean, Wilson's
He'll
not that
fired.
Good. But, you know, a lot of early readings out of training camp. Again, camp, we get all that. Is that Jackson Dart's really what they thought he could be? I mean, really good arm, kind of understanding the offense. But again, that's all great. But when the Sunday at noon rolls around, where are we?
Yeah.
You know, so we'll see what happens with that.
I will be curious. Because I think, I mean, you tell me if I'm wrong. I think right now Mike McCarthy's probably going to be the coach that everybody's watching to see what, you know, his next job is going to be after he's going to be off this year. The Giants could fit that because of the quarterback, of having Jackson Dart developing a young quarterback.
Why do we go back to this guy?
No, I mean, that's what everybody does.
I mean, Aaron Rodgers, he won one Super Bowl. They went to one Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers.
I know.
And all those years in Green Bay, and some great and talented teams went to one Super Bowl.
I wanted him out in Dallas, but of course, you know, they hired Brian Schottenheimer.
Yep.
To be the coach, which I'm like, I didn't even know he was still around.
I mean, are the Cowboys? I mean, could the Giants jump the Cowboys?
They could. I don't know. I don't know what the Cowboys are. I don't think they know what they are.
No, not at all.
So that is an interesting thing to pay attention to, but I think they got it right that it's the 49ers definitely have the best chance.
Yeah. Titans. I think Titans could be number two.
Yeah.
Again,
oh,
you just got to beat the other three awful teams in that division.
Yeah, 100%. Coming up next, we'll continue the discussion here, kind of look at what Joe has done and what I'm going to do when it comes to the SEC predictions.
We're
going to
ruffle some feathers. People aren't going to be happy with me.
Okay.
And I don't care.
Okay. We're going to do that coming up next. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Gary Stokin from the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl going to join us at the top of the next hour. Looking forward to that conversation with him. But it is that time to make the predictions when it comes to the Southeastern Conference. And who's going to win, who's going to, you know, the preseason favorites, all those things. And they don't really matter at the end of the day.
Right.
But we enjoy doing
it. We love doing that.
All right, so who you got?
So predicted order finish. I'm just giving you my top four. Number four, Tennessee I got coming in six, but four is Florida, three is Texas, two is Georgia, number one I got Alabama. And here's why I picked Alabama. This is my official all preseason SEC ballot. I got Alabama number one. They're loaded on both sides. A lot of these teams are loaded. I get all that. But Kalen DeBoer works best with an unproven quarterback. He's done it his whole career. He can shape and mold a quarterback into what he's got. The Milroe thing just seemed – Milroe was there. He had to work with the Milroe. Was a, you know, a good quarterback. But I think the fact that Alabama did not go out in the portal and get a quarterback spoke volumes to me. And they're quiet. Nobody's talking about him. And we understand all that because it's Saban's gone. But I'm telling you, man, Alabama is loaded. And Georgia is right there. And they got two unproven quarterbacks, Gunnar Stockton. We know a lot about him as well. But I just think this Alabama team's got something. There's a chip on their shoulder, and they know it. And look, and they've talked about, you know, there's a little redemption. Vanderbilt comes there. They owe Vanderbilt for what happened last year. There's something about the Alabama team and talking to people, Chase, makes me think, all right, something's good there. I got Vanderbilt at 11th. I mean, that schedule is daunting for them. But we're not putting them 16th or 15th or 14th.
Right.
So again, I think Vanderbilt's got a good team. They can go 7-5, maybe squeak out at 8-4. You don't know, but Vanderbilt I think is right there at number 11.
Well, I have them 10th. So we're kind of right there.
Okay.
Right there together.
Who's your top four?
Top four. Number. You want me to start at four or one?
Yeah, go four. Okay.
Number four, I have Alabama. Number three, I have South Carolina.
Whoa, you'll be talked about.
Yep, being, I think they could be darlings in the SEC. Number two, LSU, and number one, Texas.
No Georgia.
I think Georgia falls back.
Okay. Wow, I like it.
I have them fifth, but I think Georgia falls back.
I like it. I think everybody – I've got Texas third.
Sean Fort's calling me. He probably wants me to get off the air now for saying that.
they got a great team. It's just that third game in Neyland, when they open against Marshall and Austin Peay, I mean, they're not going to be tested until they walk into Neyland Stadium. And, the generational defensive line they've had in 21 and 22, and now you've got – put some new faces in there and go. I mean, it's a really tough – task for Georgia to go into Neyland then. I mean, there's a lot of tough games. We get all that. But, we'll see what happens. Like for Alabama, you know, they've got to go to Georgia on September 27th. That game's at 6:30 on ABC ESPN. That's going to be just crazy. But, you know, Alabama's got FSU, Louisiana Monroe, Wisconsin, three games to see what they can do and kind of get their feet wet with Ty Simpson and go from there. But the schedule's not as daunting as you think it would be in most cases. But it's still, I mean, it's what's going to happen. Now, the bottom teams, Arkansas, Kentucky, Mississippi State, we'll see what they can do if they can kind of upset some people.
All right, so I'm gonna list off the coaches in the SEC, and you just say at the end of the year, in or out. Okay?
Okay.
All right, easy enough?
Yeah.
Clark Lee.
In. Oh, he's in. Oh, in. Absolutely.
100%. Sure. Jeff Lebby.
I think he stay. You can't keep revolving coaches. Jeff Lebby's a good coach. You can't keep firing coaches because you got to give them time to make things happen.
Sam Pittman.
Gone.
Shane Beamer.
Oh, Beamer's there. That's a good piece. Turned that place around a little bit.
I think if they do what everybody thinks they're going to do, absolutely. If they crash and burn into a wall, he'll be out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's that close of a margin. And the same goes for the next one, in my opinion. Billy Napier.
Yeah, right. There's Gator Mike's probably steam out of his ears right now because he loves Billy Napier. Yeah, it could do that. But I think Napier's that's what you give.
I think I think Beamer and Napier. We were wrong. We were very wrong on that.
I was wrong on Beamer. You were very wrong on Billy Napier.
Yeah,
I mean, you called his house.
I did. This one I find interesting. Brent Venables at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I think he's out.
Yeah, I think he's on a very, very hot seat right now.
Mike Elko at Texas A&M.
No, he's good. They like him there.
Eli Drinkwitz at Missouri.
Solid. Unless he bounces out for a big, big-time job, he's good.
He could be on some short list if they continue to have a good year.
Right.
Hugh Freeze at Auburn.
Gone.
I agree with you. I think he's out.
But you can't – I mean, are they still playing paying Malzahn? They're still paying Brian Harsin?
Yeah, I don't know.
I just don't – it's just crazy to me. I mean, could you see, like, Drinkwitz leaving Missouri for an Auburn? I mean, I'm not saying he's doing that. 100%. But who knows, man?
Hey, look, I will – you said Jeff Lebby is back. You know, I think our buddy Jimbo could reappear in Starkville.
He could.
That could be interesting.
He wants to get back in. He's got to clear that name.
He's going
to
get back in.
Some point,
he'll get one. If one of these jobs opens up, he'll get back in. Mark Stoops at Kentucky.
I think Stoops is there as long as he wants to. I think Stoops might be just like, I'm good. I mean, now he's his 13th year at Kentucky. And I think if he does leave, it's a mutual, like, hey, man, thank you. Hey, no, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
And he's gone.
All right. Heupel, he's good. Kiffin, he's good. Sarkisian, he's good. Brian Kelly, I made the nuclear take the other day that this would be his last SEC media days. That was probably a hot take. But if they continue not to perform, you know, it definitely could go into next year of being like, he's got to do something or they're gonna buy him out.
Well, I mean, you got probably the best quarterback in the SEC in Garrett Nussmeier.
Yeah.
So that speaks volumes. Now you got to go win games. I got to give him a little credit, though. Starting last year on the road in the Las Vegas against USC, they lost that one. Now you go to Clemson on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
What are you doing here?
Yeah.
I mean, so if they win that game, watch out for LSU. If they beat Clemson, on the road in Death Valley, that'd be massively huge for that program.
Kirby's there as long as he wants to be at this point.
Oh, yeah.
Kalen DeBoer.
Yeah. Oh, there's no doubt. Look, he's won everywhere he's been. And what the I forget we could guess.
But what if they go 8-4 this year?
They ain't going 8-4.
You picked them. You think
they're not going 8-4. They're not going. I mean, that is a loaded football team. And they love it. Everybody's talking about Georgia, Texas, more LSU people talking about that team and the love for South Carolina and Laura Sellers. I get all that, man, but this Alabama team. Oh, besides a quarterback, if the quarterback comes through and can play well, that's going to be a good football team.
Who did you pick at quarterback?
I picked Garrett Nussmeier, number one. I think he's a really good quarterback. And number two, I got Pavia. I got Diego Pavia at number two, then third, Lenore Sellers. Again, and it felt good talking to all these people who know SEC football and say, hey, where's the love? Why is there love for Arch? And they're like, I agree. I mean, he's got the name. We've talked about that in Texas. And, you know, he popped in the game versus Louisiana Tech and Mississippi State played well. But I need to see it. Next year, yeah, granted, you know, Feinbaum throwing out that nonsense. He's going to win the Heisman Trophy and all. No, I don't believe you in that right now. But I got Pavia number two, man.
I actually have him number two as well to Nussmeier. Yeah. We did the same there.
Pavia's won big games.
Yeah.
He's won big game. I mean, he won a game at Auburn with an average pedestrian New Mexico State team back in 2023. He beat Alabama last year, almost beat Texas. I mean, there's the Virginia Tech game he played great. So, Pavia, to me, is number two, and I think he might pop out number two on this when it's all done. So,
Who's your best tight end? Did you put Stowers?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Stowers is good. Talking to people around here this week, like, you got the best tight end. And I don't have the best. Vanderbilt's got the best tight end. In football, and it's good to see that Vanderbilt's represented up there. You know, it's for years, Chase, and, you know, talking about the running backs put out there. For years, you'd come to this and be like, all right, what Tennessee running back? What Tennessee? Tennessee don't have a running back.
No.
That's mentioned in the top 10 in the SEC. So I think Josh Heupel likes that. Like, keep talking about everybody else. We're fine. We'll handle our own and do that. But no Tennessee running back will make the list this year.
No, I don't think so. I don't even know is a wide receiver going to make the list?
I don't think I got one in there at all.
Brazel is really the only one that I think was eligible.
Yeah, Ryan Williams is the best. I mean, so good. And then Cam Coleman at Auburn is really good. Aaron Anderson at LSU is top notch. All that. I'm curious to see, though, Chase, who'd you have the top long snapper?
I haven't gotten that far yet.
I got old Durham Harris, that a long snapper out of Vanderbilt.
There you go.
They've got you ranking.
I love that you can rank long snappers. Yeah.
And Bennett Brady at number two from Tennessee. And don't forget Alex McLaughlin from Kentucky at number three, the best long snapper out there as well.
There you go. The little preseason rankings that usually don't mean anything. Coming up next, Gary Stokin is going to join us here on Radio Row. He is the head of the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. Really good conversation with him. You will hear that coming up next. It is Chase and Big Joe, SEC Media Days, the final day presented by Brewhouse South in Cool Springs here on 102.5 The Game.